Hi guys, hope everyone's well and welcome back to the Improvement Podcast. So in episode 188 is going to be a listener Q&A where I'm going to go through questions that you guys have submitted. So if you're one of the individuals who have asked a question, thank you so much for doing so. And if you have any questions you'd like covered in the next Q&A, feel free to just ask them whenever and I'll just make note of them for going over the next episode, which I'll typically do every 10 episodes when I get to kind of the round number mark, hence why I'm doing it at episode 180. So the first question someone's asked is, will running a 5K on rest days limit my progress? And for a bit of background, this individual is in a dieting phase trying to lose weight. So most likely doing cardio for maybe their health benefits and also to put them in a calorie deficit. In other words, put them in a position where they're going to be losing body fat through burning more calories than they're currently consuming. So if a 5K will kind of limit your progress. One, depends how many rest days you have, I guess. Two, it depends on if you're accustomed to it and what your other activity looks like. Like if someone's currently doing 20,000 steps and then a 5K on top of that, that's a bit different than if someone's totally sedentary, low stress, recovering well, and they do a 5K as well. Also, can depend how lean you are, but for the most part, you should be okay. Unless, well, yeah, you should be fine. I don't think there's a problem with it. Do I think it's an optimal way to get cardio in? Definitely not. The reason being is when it comes to running, it's got impact on our joints every time we kind of hit the ground. Also, what it's got is eccentric loading. So eccentric loading is basically when we think of like a lowering phase during a squat, during a leg press, during a bench press, during like a lat pull down when we let the bar go up. That's the eccentric portion of a lift, and the eccentric portion of the lift often comes with a bit more muscle damage. Muscle damage is something that will impede your ability to recover and as a result impede your ability to therefore perform. So the concentric or the way up, so the way up when you're doing a squat, the way up when you're doing a leg press or pressing the barbell up or pulling the bar down when you're doing a lat pull down, that's a concentric portion and that usually doesn't come with as much muscle damage or muscle disruption you could look at it as. Which means it will be less invasive on your recovery. So in that sense, what you could consider is instead of doing something like the treadmill, you can instead do your cardio on something like a cross trainer or a recumbent bike or an upright bike where you've not got any eccentric loading present and it's not going to have as much of a negative impact on your ability to recover for your sessions, so you're fresher for them. And also, again, because it's not got any impact, it's going to have less stress on your joints, which could help stay or keep you injury free over the long term. So that would be my preferred form of cardio. And yeah, like I said, it can depend on other factors like how lean you are, what how far into the diet you've been, what your steps look like the rest of the day. But for the most part, you'll be fine. You're not going to lose your leg muscle. But what I'd do is I'd make sure you're I just consider like when your leg training is. If your leg training's a day after a rest day, might not be a good idea either. You might want to place it as far away from the training window as you can in that sense. The next question someone's asked is, when am I next competing? So I am well, recording this on April 2025. I last competed and stepped off stage around about October, I think it was 2024. I'm horrible with dates. And I'm next looking to compete 2028. So quite a lot of people have asked me that, and then I tell them 2028, and then they look at me shocked, like I've got, I don't know, I've got free eyes or whatever, just because it's such like a long duration. But what you've got to remember is when you compete naturally, a few things take place. One, if you give yourself appropriate amount of time, and what in my opinion is give yourself enough time, and the most efficient way to kind of do a contest prep is doing it for quite a long duration. The more time you give yourself, the slower rate of loss you can have, which means the more likely you are to retain the tissue that you've built and retain the performance, which will ultimately impact how much tissue you retain. So if you give yourself enough time, that gives you quite a long duration spent in the deficit. So I think last year during my contest prep, I was in a dieting phase for well over 6 months, which is a long time to have no off-plan meals. It's a long time to spend losing weight, and it's a long time to spend not in a good position to progress. Also, when we think about how much time it takes to build tissue, It takes a while. So if I compete every year, I'll look the same every year, because it's not like I'm, again, if I'm competing, let's say every year, and my diet's 6 months long, then that's only 6 months spent in actual gaining phase, in a good position to build muscle. But saying that, I'm not really in the best position to build muscle, because when you get out of a contest prep, your performance is down a touch, so you need to bring that back up again. Hormonally, you're not in a good spot, meaning your hormones are out of whack and you're not in a good position to build muscle or just function on a daily basis. You feel absolutely horrendous. You've got no libido. You are irritable. Your hunger's through the roof and your food focus is extremely high. So there's a lot of negatives that come, and your sleep's in the gutters. So there's a lot of negative things that come with it. Also, got a girlfriend. It's a bit selfish doing that every year and asking her, right, I'm not going to have any off-plan meals. I'm not going to kind of be myself. I'm going to be a bit, in my own, in my shell, etc. And yeah, just from a long-term ability to progress, like you make progress when you're gaining, when you're in a gaining phase. So you want to have the majority of your time spent in a surplus. And natural bodybuilders who compete every year end up looking the same year after year, and I don't want to be one of them. Next time I want to step on stage, I want to make a good impression. So I competed last year as a novice and a junior. Next time I compete, I'm going to be competing as or in men's open, which is like a big jump. There's a lot of great athletes who compete in men's open. I could be against someone who's in their mid-30s who could actually win the whole show. And he could be in my class, who has an extra 10 years of training under his belt. So I don't want to compete next year after winning the world finals and winning the Scottish and becoming second in two other federations in Britain in basically national competitions to then not placing. I don't want to kind of make that downgrade, if that makes sense. I want to make a good strong start in men's open. So I'm willing to take the necessary time off to improve. And to be fair, I'm already kind of missing it. Like when I see people start prep, I'm kind of like, oh, I've got the itch for it a bit in a sense. But at the same time, I don't. In a same sense, I couldn't think of anything worse. But I love the process. I don't need to compete to love the process. I just love the process of getting better. And that includes being in a gaining phase. That's when you make the progress. So I've got no problems at all committing to that long-term gaining. And to be fair, like, I don't really care about looking good for the most part. Like, just like the process. I like the process of the self-improvement. I've got a missus as well, so I don't need to stay lean or look good or that. Well, to be fair, hopefully for like average individuals who aren't into the gym standard, even when I am quite heavy in a gaining phase, I'll look res relatively all right. But I think you get the drift there. I was just having a slight joke. So yeah, 2028 for the reasons discussed. So that I can make good improvements, so I don't burn out, so it's kind of fair I can give time back to my girlfriend. And also, I've got to move out at some point. Not, I say that like I'm getting forced out of my house. I'm going to be moving out at some point, so there's a lot of things, other things happening in life that I've got to take into consideration. The next question is thoughts on a push pull legs off, or sorry, a push pull legs off split. And what the split basically allows is, oh, when we think about a split, what there's no magic split. A split's just a way of getting a appropriate amount of volume in, and hopefully suits your needs in terms of getting enough volume for the muscle groups you want to bring up, prioritize the muscle groups you want to develop as well. As for push pull legs, it can work. I think as someone gets more advanced, they might struggle to recover from it because the overall load they'll be lifting will get higher and higher, and it will have a larger impact on how fatiguing those lifts will be. So for people who get quite advanced, they might find they struggle to recover from it from like a central nervous system fatigue point of view. In other words, they'll just be battered from session to session and struggle to progress their lifts over time as a result of that. So that's a potential downside of that split. And what you could consider doing instead, a good way to work around could be like a push pull legs rest upper lower split if you want to have that split in like a 7 day rotation, drop it down to 5 days a week. What you can also consider as well is if you want to run that 6 day a week split, you can, but you might just want to be a bit more mindful that you don't do too much work session to session, so you're fresh in time for the next session. You also want to be mindful of making sure that you give yourself appropriate exercise selection. So if you're doing like push pull legs, you probably don't want to for pull. You probably don't want to do like a deadlift, a rack pull, a bent over row, and then like tons of heavy movements, and then go into legs and do another sort of deadlift, a squat, then a leg press, then another squat, and then a dumbbell walking lunge, because you'll just be absolutely battered. So if you've got more demanding sessions or a more demanding split, you want to be careful about your exercise selection so you can pick ones that you can recover from throughout the week as a whole. And if the next question is, that's kind of all I want to kind of cover there. I think I kind of covered that. So basically, if you can run it, you feel fine, your sessions progress, you're fine. The best way to know if something works is, instead of, not that you're wrong for asking, and sorry, asking the question, there's nothing wrong with that at all, of course. But the best way to know, instead of needing to ask someone, will this work? Does this work? Try it. Try it. Do you progress session to session? If you're not getting tangible progression session to session, you most likely aren't progressing. If your lifts are going up session to session, you most likely are progressing. Next question is, if a movement like dumbbell press has stalled while dieting, is it worth swapping out? So, as a whole, when you're dieting, I wouldn't make a lot of adjustments to your exercise selection, because most of the time an exercise is probably not progressing, not because you are dieting, or sorry, not because the exercise is stale or plateaued. It's probably just because you're in a deficit, you're in a dieting phase. And if you decide to swap all your movements out when you're in a dieting phase because they're not progressing, then the other ones that you do add in will just progress, not from building muscle or necessarily getting stronger, but just neurological adaptations. In other words, getting used to the movement patterns. Because any, regardless if you're dieting down, if you add any new movement, you'll probably progress it initially okay at first, just because it's new. So I personally wouldn't change a lot while dieting, because when you do swap to a new movement as well, your ability to get a lot of output from that, or in other words, stimulus from it, is low, because you've not got that skill acquisition of doing and practicing that movement for a good duration of time. So in that case, I'd look to keep movements the same. However, this individual has asked specifically if they're running a dumbbell press and it's stalled. A dumbbell press and some pressing movements are the one of the caveats to it. And the reason being is dumbbell presses are quite an unstable movement, and generally, when you're dieting, for myself and most individuals, you'll find your pressing is what goes, meaning your ability to hold on to your leg work, your pulling movements is usually quite high. It's usually the pressing lifts that tend to suffer and tend to drop a bit in terms of performance. So with the dumbbell press in particular, you could look to swap that for some sort of like machine chest press or Smith machine press, something in a more stable environment, because when we drop body fat, when we lose weight, when we're in a dieting phase, we lose external stability. In other words, we lose the ability to stabilize and balance lifts and balance things like dumbbells, barbells, just because we've got less body fat on our frame. And the more stability we have, the more force we can produce. In other words, the more we can lift, which is why you tend to drop performance when you're in a dieting phase, because obviously you've got less energy coming in. In other words, you've got less carbohydrates available, which will have a negative impact on your ability to perform. But not only that, but the fact that you are losing body fat around areas like your knees, your hips, your lower back will make you less stable, and that lack of stability will mean it's going to be a bit harder to hold on to those movements. So I'd personally leave most movements the same, but it's not a bad idea if you know you've got a diet in the near future, or you're in a dieting phase and you feel like when you do a dumbbell press, you're getting nothing from it from your chest. It just feels a bit iffy and a bit like all over the shop in terms of stabilizing the lift. It's not a bad idea to then swap it out for another movement in that reason. And the reason why you might want to do that before a dieting phase is just so you've got time to get used to it, actually work your numbers up and be skilled at that movement and be accustomed to it beforehand, so you can get a lot of stimulus to retain tissue as you're dieting down. And the next question, someone's asked, why do I use fat grips on the chest press? So fat grips are basically the like blue, oh, you just won't know the color of them if you've not, or you just won't know what I'm on about in terms of the color if you've not seen it on my Instagram. But basically, they're like fat handles you can pop on certain machines and implements. Like you could pop them on a barbell to basically make the diameter of the barbell thicker, or you could put it on the machine to make the diameter of a handle thicker. And these are things I use on the chest press and the dip that I've started implementing recently. The reason why I use them is for a few purposes. I did see my coach use them, and I kind of got the idea from him. So the chest press I use, the handle's quite thin, and just having a bit more of a thicker handle to press from feels a bit more comfortable. And also, because the fat grips make the handle thicker, it actually makes a distance between machine bottoming out and my hand position a bit larger. What I mean by that is it basically allows me to get a better stretch before the machine bottoms out, yielding a better range of motion for my chest, my front delts, and also my triceps, leading to potentially a better stimulus. And as well as that, it is a bit more comfortable, and it allows me to take a bit of a narrower grip on the handle, because the machines that I use, or the chest press in particular that I use, the handles are quite wide. So having that slightly narrower handle feels a bit more favourable, just from comfort and from having a good arm path. So that's why I use the fat grips on the chest press. Obviously, it's splitting hairs getting that extra bit of range of motion. However, if I'm doing it, might as well get the most out of the exercise. That's how I kind of look at it. People will be like, "Oh, why optimize it, or why do this, why do that?" But it takes 2 seconds. There's no harm in doing so. So I kind of might as well get that extra wee bang for my buck with a certain movement. And last question I'm going to answer today is, how do you know if you're doing too much in the gym? So the best metric to go by if you're doing too little work or too much work is going to be your lifts. If you are progressing your lifts, they're going up in terms of your strength, so you're getting more reps, you're getting more weight while keeping your form the same, then that's a foolproof way to know that you're building muscle and you're making good progress. Whereas if your lifts aren't going up and your sleep's nailed, your nutrition's nailed, you're eating around your session, your hydration's in a good spot, basically you're controlling your variables and it's not down to anything else, and your lifts still aren't going up, then you're probably doing too much or too little. You'll probably know which one of them you're doing. Like if you're doing 2 sets for legs, probably not going to be you're doing too much. If you're doing 20 sets for legs, you're probably doing too much. So you basically want to give yourself enough time to recover and be fresh before the next session in order to progress, so that you can string together productive weeks, months of gaining and building a muscle. So yeah, the best metric's going to be your logbook, what's happening in terms of your performance. But be mindful, if you're in a dieting phase, it just might not be feasible for you to progress certain movements at the later stages of it. But for the most part, throughout the start of a dieting phase, the middle of it, you should be able to progress pretty well. But that's something to consider. And also something to consider is like exercise selection. So you might just be doing movements that are quite fatiguing, so you're carrying quite a lot of central nervous system fatigue session to session. This will probably apply for folk who are more advanced and they lift a lot of load and a lot of movements. That's something more for them to consider. Whereas like a muscular fatigue point of view, that's more if, let's say, you're carrying soreness or fatigue in your actual muscle groups and not from a central nervous system point of view. So yeah, your logbook will tell you. And if you are doing too much, just taper the amount of work done down, sorry, until you feel that you're not sore and you're getting progression session to session. Or if you're doing too little, you'll know because you're not giving yourself enough stimulus, enough productive work to see neurological adaptations and strength improvements for the next session. So thank you very much for everyone watching or listening. Hope you've found it valuable. If you've got any questions for the next episode, let me know and I'll happily answer them, and put them in my list of kind of questions to answer. And as well as that, if you did enjoy the episode, any support's massively appreciated. That could be liking, subscribing, leaving a comment, or simply sharing it on your Instagram story and giving me a tag. So any support's massively appreciated, and hope everyone has a great rest of their day.